So, what do you say after being gone for 4 years? I guess the only thing to say is, I'm back, bitches. Like T.O.M. chilling out the galaxy and we know him. Putting tunes up that'll keep you up. Glued to the screen like you do too much. The galaxy is ours, the sun and the stars. Tsunami's on and chilling hard. Watch it closely from a perch among the stars. As viewers await the moment when the spirit bomb can charge. Hino Yui self-detonate. You haka show. Hey there, Space Cowboys. Yes, it's your old friend Tom. Yes, I'm back from outer space. You just sitting there with that sad look upon your face. As I said, I'm back, bitches. After 4 years. 4 years, I am finally back because, quite frankly, I'd had enough of sitting in the shadows, afraid of what may come, of what I may say, because, quite frankly, I was gold back then, I've been gold, and I will always stay gold, and what my prerogative is. And there ain't nobody who can take that away from me. Nobody. People will try, but nobody can take that away from me. So, we are back with Tom's prerogative. Here to kick ass and chew bubblegum. And just quite frankly, I can't afford the bubblegum anymore. So, but we are changing here at the prerogative. Which I'm kind of reflecting in the title because there's sort of two titles that this possibly can be. One that you'll probably see in the title, which is Tom's Prerogative 138, which is, it is episode 138 of if we were to continue and are continuing the original timeline. But one could also call this Tom's Prerogative Volume 2, Episode 1. As this is a new volume. Kind of like when a comic book sort of says that it starts a new number 1. And it, well, this is the number 1 that started in this year. The year of our good lord, 2021. Well, maybe it's not the good year. That's besides the point. But you get the point. Either way, it still has the same title of Netboy Flick Bops Has to Die Hard This Christmas, which I think is a clever title, and hopefully you do once you listen to this episode. The point is that we are starting anew here at Tom's Prerogative, and the show is changing. No longer is this show going to be a show just about animation, which is, this is the first change to talk about. For years, I've wanted to talk about a variety of things, and it's led to me starting basically podcasts for the sole reason to talk about maybe one or two subjects that I want to cover in comic books, or one or two subjects to cover in video games. The quite frank truth, there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to talk about it here. So, the first part of the new format is, I'm not just talking about animation. Though I may do some new shows, in particular, I'm looking to do a show in which I go by the timeline covering all of the animated shows on Toonami. But quite frankly, no longer will I be covering animation solely. I still will cover animation. There will still be episodes. In fact, if things go well, as of this recording, and I can get this show out this week, and a show out, I can possibly do a show next week in which I can cover, quite frankly, animation classics for Christmas. Which is, cross fingers hope, I can do. Again, I'm trying to get back into this and, you know, it's been hard. We'll get into why it's been hard in just a second. But no longer will I be just covering animation. I'm also going to use this space, as you'll see with this episode, to cover live action TV and movies that are, shall we say,
geeked cultured in a way, among other things. But to talk even about music or video games, even. Because this is no longer a review show. This is definitely more now of an opinionated, you know, view show. This is my prerogative of why such and such is good, and here, let me tell you why. That leads to the other reason why I wanted to do this change, which is also the largest reason why I've been away for 4 years. Regardless of what it is I've been covering, and it particularly hit me harder with the last show I was doing before I came back, which was my wrestling show, CMG's Wrestling Reviews. To where I've just become exasperated by fandom, but also society in how we communicate and how we have discussions. And you can't see the air quote, but I air quoted discussions, which come off more as just battlegrounds in which everybody is trying to sit on their own virtual signaling soapbox to virtual signal to whatever group and tribe they're part of that, ooh, look at me, look at me, look at how I am so good and pure. You know, whether it be jackasses with sexist comments, or whether it be major Hollywood studios looking for a reason to escape why their show was so bad. Gee, I wonder if we'll cover that topic later in this episode. It's just something to where it's driven me crazy. And the way I've seen society, you know, just treat itself has driven me crazy. Like, this is not the America that I grew up with. You know, the America I grew up with used to be where we'd have discussions and we'd talk to each other. We'd talk to each other like adults, like mature people, treating each other with respect, regardless of whatever our opinions were. And I just feel like that's gone, like, because people rather hold power and like, yeah, I won this argument. My view was the dominant view. My view was the popular view. Which is really what it is. You know, there was this article I was reading on the lack of disability superheroes, or superheroes with disabilities. Now, like, for instance, who are disabled due to the fact that they have physical scars or physical disabilities. A lot of times, the only superheroes like them they see are really supervillains. But in this article, they are talking about how they just don't want superheroes to be disabled. They want popular superheroes to be disabled. Which, again, to me is like, thank you, somebody finally said the reality of what they wanted, which is if the diversity and a lot of this fighting about what characters look like and the larger societal issues that have infiltrated fandom and talking about how movies are made and how animation is made and all that, what it really comes down to is popularity. They want this group that they feel represents them, or this character that represents them, to be popular. As in, everybody wants to be that character. Which they want, because if everybody wants to be that character, that means everybody wants to be them. Therefore, they're popular. That means they're successful. And that's just not the point of a character, or what a character should mean. I mean, if that's the only way you can view characters, that's your lens. But quite frankly, that's not the way a character should be thought out. Because a character shouldn't be owned by anyone or any one group. The best characters, the characters who are truly popular, can be loved by many different groups for many different reasons. And this is another reason why I've been away for 4 years. I've practiced that talk I just did in my head like 20 different times. And it still came out in a way that I feel like I don't think I got my full point across. But you know what? We're going to have plenty of episodes for me to put my foot in mouth. You know? Because we'll definitely be talking about this subject more. Because it is one of the things that's been keeping me away. And quite frankly, I am just sick and tired of being afraid of losing friends for just plainly stating my opinion. You know, this is my prerogative. I like this show because this way. There are certain reasons I like it. And there are certain words I like to use. And I'm sick and tired of whether it be an opinion or also word crimes. To quote one of my favorite Weird Al songs, I'm sick and tired of these word crimes. And I'm sick and tired of being afraid of breaking them, quite frankly. So yeah, I'm just sick and tired of all these fears for whether it be word crimes or opinion crimes or whatever you call them. That definitely led to me not wanting to do reviewing anymore. And so this is going to be more opinion-based, kind of quasi-review in a way a lot of times, but definitely more opinion-based. And hopefully this new format of the show is something you can find you can enjoy. Hopefully it'll be, I know everybody hates this E-word, educational. And, you know, give people a thought process into, maybe I should check out this show. And all the things that we hope for when we do a successful podcast in talking about geek culture type of things. I think I should stop talking about that because we don't want the whole show to be about that. Now, do we? I mean, I could go on and on and talk about why this show changed and everything that pissed me off over the past 4 years. But, you know, I already know I have a habit for going on and on. And I've already jam-packed this podcast episode with not one, but two prerogatives to tell you about, if it hasn't already been clear for my return. But I also don't want this to be 2-hour podcast anymore. Neither do you. So we're going to move on. And like I said, to celebrate my return, not one, but two Tom's prerogative I've come to bring to you. And both of the topics should be very obvious to you if you read that title. Netboy Flipbop has to die hard this Christmas. And with the first one, we're going to stay current. What a current series that just recently, as a couple days ago, got announced that its first season would be its only season and that it would not be getting a second season as it would be canceled. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about the live-action Cowboy Bebop on Netflix. And for my first prerogative back, well, I'm here to tell you that Tom's prerogative is that the live-action Cowboy Bebop sucks. And it's not the fans' fault. And we're going to get into that right after this. Welcome back. Where to start with this one? Well, first off, to start, there are two things I want to bring up. One, which I wanted to bring up at the start of the show as a bit of a warning, which I kind of forgot to do, so I'll say it here. Warning, in this discussion of my opinion, I'm going to use the word pussy to describe a certain character. I understand that this offends people, but you know what? I have spent so much time trying to figure out a different word that could match what I want to use pussy for, and I can't. The word pussy just fits perfectly for the description of the, emasculating of a character's masculinity to such a point that there's no other word that fits it. The only word I can come up with is pussy. So, if the word pussy offends you being used like that, that's your warning. Do you want to go to the next prerogative? Cut a half hour. I wish I had a timestamp to tell you right now. I don't. Or, you know, maybe check the next episode. But that's your warning. That I'm going to use the word pussy because it's the perfect word for what I want to talk about and describe. And, you know, I'm sorry if it offends you, but the word is going to be used. The other thing is, while I'm talking about why or why Cowboy Bebop does not work, somebody who did a much better job than I did will do is Mother's Basement over at YouTube. And I cannot suggest you go and watch his almost hour-long, not review, but not opinion piece. It's a little bit of both and everything on the live-action Cowboy Bebop. To which, again, also props to him. That's where I got the joke, Netboy Flip Bop, from. So, complete credit to him for that part of the joke. Please go to YouTube, check that out. Why do I think that the live-action Cowboy Bebop sucks? Well, it sucks because it sucks, because I think the best way I can put it right off the bat, that if the anime version of Cowboy Bebop is space jazz, the live-action Cowboy Bebop is space disco. And like regular disco, it needs to die. And apparently it has died. But to a bigger point, it's like there's so many different things to cover to why it's bad. First of all, let's start off with the one that everybody wants to talk about, which is Faye Valentine. Just to get that out of the way. Alright. Let's just start off with the fact that Daniela Panetta, who played Faye Valentine, did a wonderful job with the character that she was given. And in fact, before anything else, all the actors, Mustafa, Sharith, and Juncho, they had great chemistry with each other, and there were episodes that I very much enjoyed because of the chemistry between them and the characters they were playing, the chemistry between the characters. So let's just get that out of the way. That, oh, found nothing good. There was some good stuff there. It was just buried in the three middle episodes. But with that out of the way, just the idea that this, people think that this just sucks because the, oh, they didn't give Faye Valentine big enough boobs and wasn't sexy. It is, and that's why the fans revolted. It's bull. It's just absolute bull. That's not to sit there and say that them deciding not to do that version of Faye Valentine wasn't disappointing. And that I hated this adaptation of Faye Valentine. But that's what this was. This was a different adaptation of Faye Valentine. And again, I'm fine with that. I just wish they would have been honest, or at least more honest about the fact than they really were. Because they were kind of honest about it, but they really weren't. But just more honest about the fact that, again, this is a Christian country where sexuality is frowned upon. No longer not just by right-wing Christian people who think that sex is a sin, but also by the extreme left who see sex as a tool of the patriarchy. And thus, you can't have women just be sexy anymore, or at least be sexy in an effort to target 18 to 49-year-old male demographics. If any of those groups view a female character as sexy in that way, it's an immediate no-no. And Faye Valentine was viewed in that way. So, can't have her outfit, which, yeah, again, they're right. Outfit would have came loose at fighting. Have no problem with the jacket and that stuff. Doesn't mean in the, you know, the scenes where you're just standing and talking about that she can't be back in the original costume. Or when she's outside sunbathing, why she can't be in a bikini. They did one time where she was in a dress, so I'll give them the dress part. But, you know, again, she didn't just stay in that one outfit. She had multiple outfits, but that's besides the point. But again, this is unfortunately something that happens to female characters in from anime, like Faye Valentine, who are sexy. They don't understand why they are sexy. They are sexy because being sexy and being confident in that sexiness and displaying it is a form of strength. I'm in control of my own sexuality. I'm in control of who I am and who I want to be. And you know what? You don't get to choose what I get to wear and what I get to flaunt. Yeah, I'm showing it off. And you can't have it unless I say so. That is a form of strength. That is how sex and sexuality being displayed in that way and what gets constituted as fan service is a form of strength for that character. Whether it be Faye Valentine, Fujiko Mine, or even more recent characters like Rhea Scrimery. But, again, can't have that in that country because we don't like to view, we can't have that sort of ideological difference in our viewpoints. Heaven forbid we think deeper about the display of people displaying sexuality in that form. No, it's either a tool of the patriarchy now or it's a sin. A sin against God. Can't have a third option there, nope. But again, I don't have a problem with that. I thought the adaptation of Faye that they did was just fine. And if that was really the only change that they did as far as to characters, this show would have been fine. If they had followed it exactly to what they said about, oh, we're going to do an adaptation of the show where we'll expand on things because the episodes were only 30 minutes and blah, blah, blah. That's not what we got. Oh, no. Where to begin with how they goddamn ruined characters in this show? And again, I want to state this for fact. I thought all the actors did a great job. Mustafa Suri, John Cho, Danny Panella. I was excited to see Tamara Tooney in the show as Anna. And thought how they changed the Anna character to be the proprietor of a jazz club. And that Gren is works for Anna. I thought that was interesting. It was, even though that meant that they weren't going to do Gren as the character directly for the show, which I think is a crime, because Gren is an amazing character, amazingly tragic character that, again, if you watch those two episodes of the original anime and you're not crying at the end of that, oh my god, where is your humanity? But for the adaptation and how they were changing it around at the beginning, I was okay with it, you know? And again, I'm a Law & Order SVU, so again, I'm very happy to see Tamara Tooney again. Where to start? Oh my god, let's start with Jet, okay? Start with Jet. Oh my god, what did they do to Jet? Why did they have to make Jet a cock? Like, seriously, they made him a cock. Don't get me wrong. You know what? You want to give him a daughter, that's fine. In a past relationship, but oh my god. Jet didn't need to be changed. You know, Jet didn't need to be changed. He was the perfect sort of cool father figure. And instead, they make him this worry wart who's like, you know, I gotta get something for my kid, and blah, 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 blah. And just like, you're just always whining about everything. And it's like, why? Why did you have to change Jet to somebody who's this sort of condescending parent figure, as opposed to the sort of, the overbearing father figure, as opposed to this sort of calm, overlooking, cool father figure that he was from the show, the original anime? Like, that didn't need to be changed, but no, they make him a godforsaken cock for no reason. There, and again, there are elements where the character does grow on me, but particularly the first couple episodes and the last couple episodes, it's just like, this is not Jet Black. You know who Jet Black is? Jet Black is that character who, if you watch the first episode of the anime, to where after the bar fight happens, and he goes to the bar after the shooting happens, and he's trying to get information, and the two syndicate guys come, and he just, like, bashes one over the skull, and then, like, puts the other in a headlock with his metal arm. He's like, so, I need some information. And just cool as ice. That's Jet Black. He's, no matter the situation, Jet is cool of the situation and knows what to do. He's a strategist. He's an old dog with years of experience. And they just threw that all away. Before I get to the person I want to talk about, who I'm going to lose my mind talking about, just some of the, like, some of the guest characters, like, Hakim. Oh my god, what did they do to Hakim? Like, particularly at the end of that episode. Like, Hakim was this cool one-off character in the anime who was obviously influenced by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's villain character in Game of Death with the afro and everything. And just was this kick-ass amazing character. All that badassery, gone. Now he's this sniveling little child who gets convinced, oh, I am bad and I need to be taken in by you. Oh, and then just because, of course, we apparently need some wokeness then introduced into a series that the original anime was 20 times more woke than this live-action series ever was about the police and police brutality. But, oh no, we're going to have our small moment of, we're talking about police corruption and having a Black Lives Matter moment with the frickin' police and having them shoot the suspect instead of arresting him. Why? Why did that need to be in there? That made no sense. I'm literally pulling my hair out this moment. But none of it. And again, though, there were some good spots. Adrienne Barbeau, I'm completely messing up her name, which I hate because she played Catwoman in Batman the Animated Series. She was amazing as Maria Murdock, the eco-terrorist. Christina Dumfour as Whitney. How they changed that character, made that character a female. And then that entire episode, that was a great episode. Very much enjoyed that. Her chemistry with Tyson Ritter, who's the Iron Man. Again, I loved everything about that episode. So there are good things here. But the central cast, oh my god. And let's just get into it. Oh my god, they made Vicious a pussy. And there's no other way to describe it. They took one of the most badass, frightening, scary characters in all of anime and Vicious, the literal Sephiroth of anime, and they made him into a goddamn just daddy's whiny little bitch boy. Oh my daddy this, straight up pussy. Completely demasculated him of, like, if there is a character that just emanated the Vicious masculine terror, it's Vicious, and he completely took all that away. Like, I don't believe for one moment that Vicious is this badass anymore, capable of taking over the syndicate. And then Julia, it's like, They took Julia from this maternal figure, and the background story they give her makes no sense at all. This makes her, oh, just someone who just happened to be on the ride with Spike and Vicious. And again, it just completely takes away from the storyline that was from the original anime. That, Again, they said, well, we're going to expand on it. Well, you can't expand on something when you completely discard the storyline you're saying you're going to expand on. The whole point of Julia and Vicious' storyline in the original anime was that Vicious was this horrible backstabber who was would use any opportunity to climb up the ladder, and he did it silently and brutally because he did it from the shadows. And it got to a point to where the syndicate was tired of him, and not only did they decide to get deal with him, but anybody associated with him, which made both Spike and Julia targets. Vicious is the common thread that brings them all back, and you threw all of that away. For one of the most cliched type of mystery storylines that has been done to death, which I find funny considering Cowboy Bebop, whose like one criticism is, it's nothing but character cliches. So how do we solve that criticism? With more cliches. Oh, not to mention that the episodes barely used any of Yoko Kanno's score, which is an essential part of Cowboy Bebop. You have Yoko Kanno's score put barely there in the background as opposed to being right there front and center in action scenes and everything, which is what absolutely made Cowboy Bebop, because it was the literal percussion, the heartbeat of the series. All that gone. Again, I don't think that the producers fully understood Cowboy Bebop. I think their understanding of Cowboy Bebop was of what they saw on DeviantArt and what they saw in reviews and stuff, because it's very obvious that the target demographic of this show was to people who their only understanding of the original Cowboy Bebop anime was what they saw in DeviantArt and what they heard in reviews and saw in small clips. Because while it seems like there were a couple who did, most of the people making decisions, it seems, on this production knew nothing about the series. And that, you add up all that, and what you have is a live-action Cowboy Bebop that is Cowboy Bebop in name only. It's like the 98 Godzilla movie in that, you know, really, if you look at that movie, it's actually a decent giant monster movie. I'd say a very good giant monster movie. It's just, what it isn't, is a Godzilla movie. And as a Godzilla movie, it sucks. And here you have a science fiction space western that, you know, has the makings to be good, but you know what it isn't? By any necessarily means, and it's so far from being Cowboy Bebop. Which is unfortunate, because the name on the title of the series is Cowboy Bebop. But no, it's the fans' fault. Well, let's cover that part to why, which is now the thing, since it's now been canceled, and they want to blame the fans. No, it's not the fans' fault. Because the fans they're talking about are fake fans. And look, we talk about, I know people don't like to talk about fake fans or real fans, especially since so often, let's be honest, among real fan circles, fake fans are what get used to describe as people who use pop culture to satisfy their socio-political science ideologies, especially if they are classify as social justice warriors. But let's be honest, it's also on the other side of the political spectrum. You have people who are racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, hateful, spiteful, horrible people who only care about themselves and what they like and being cool, who need to always be in the fad and being part of the cool kid and the cool gang and always need to be seen as successful and everything and just have no problem saying hurtful, spiteful, horrible things to people because they use the anonymity of the internet as protection, which is pisses me off even more because the social justice warriors then don't go after those people and cancel them. No, it's people like me and people who have legitimate and have passionate views, who's because we're easy targets. But I digress. These fake fans who use the internet to say hurtful, spiteful things, and they should be called out for the hurtful, spiteful things. But they don't know. It's obvious they don't know what Cowboy Bebop is. And again, like I said, it's obvious that their complete understanding of Cowboy Bebop is what they've seen in clips or in reviews or what they've seen on BuzzFeed pop lists. They have no concept of what Cowboy Bebop is really about. As opposed to those of us who are passionate about the series, like myself, who has, you know, Cowboy Bebop in my top 10 favorite anime of all time. Number 8, by the way. Yeah, I know, that may seem sacrilege. Did number 8. One day I'll go over that list and I'll definitely piss people off. But, again, I can talk about individual episodes. And I have such a passionate love for everything that made Cowboy Bebop, Cowboy Bebop. Again, praise to Mother's Basement, who's explain this so much better than I can right now. But the point I'm getting at is, this is Hollywood's MO. A month and a half ago, before the show premiered, and they put out some of the first photos of Cowboy Bebop, and they got mixed reviews, they already started on, oh, the sexist comments that went to Danielle Panetta about how her character looks. And you know what? Those emails were horrible. And I feel bad that Daniela had to get those sexist tweets and everything criticizing her character unfairly. But at the same time, those weren't real fans. And the moment they started focusing on what was always a small percentage of an opinion of what people were seeing, it's like, up, oh, here we go again. Hollywood's MO. Because this, we first really started this, initiated with the 2016 female Ghostbusters. We saw it used to justify why Ms. Marvel didn't do as well as Disney hoped. And every now and then when you have a particular instance in which there is some type of sexism involved, it's Hollywood's MO to like, oh, sexism isn't why this show didn't do well. It's their escape clause to, no, it's not our fault having no understanding of the source material and having edicts that completely ruined the characters and made a show that barely made sense. No, it's not our fault. It's these sexist fans who aren't real fans and don't represent anime fandom, but unfortunately now represent all anime fandom and that we have to shoulder. It pisses me off, but this is Hollywood's MO. So now, these fake, racist, sexist trolls on the internet, I mean, and that's the thing, I don't even know if some of these so-called people are real. A lot of them are probably internet trolls, because that's the other part of it. But that's a whole other subject. But no, that's going to represent everybody's view of Cowboy Bebop. Even though I know a lot of legitimate Cowboy Bebop fans and fans of anime who have given passionate reviews of this live-action Cowboy Bebop with very fair criticism. But we're ignored. We, the real fans who do that, we're ignored because we're not the loudest and we don't say the most offensive things. Because that is Hollywood's MO. Find the racists, blame them. Or I should say, find the racists and make everybody's criticism them. So, in closing, Cowboy Bebop sucks because, as I said before, if the anime is space jazz, this live-action series was space disco and it needed to die. And it did die. But it's not the fans' fault. It is the overproduction by Netflix and Hollywood's fault for not understanding the source material, not having the balls to integrate Cowboy Bebop in a way it should have been done. And it's not the fans' fault that there are racist assholes out there who say racist and sexist things. And the fact that they want to place the blame for the entire series' failure on a view that, oh, all those anime fans are these racist people when we're not, is offensive. and quite frankly, is telling to why this series failed. That is my prerogative on Cowboy Bebop. I mean, I could spend all day talking about this. But I have one more surprise, because again, like I said, I'm returning, and, you know, I just can't leave you on a sour note. You know, it's Christmas time. I gotta, especially just in case I don't get the Christmas special I have in mind out in time, I gotta leave you something with a bit Christmas, so. Hey, so, I have something I want to ask you. What's the, you know what the greatest Christmas movie of all time is? Die Hard. Yeah, I know, you've heard that joke before. But you know what? Tom's prerogative is that Die Hard is a great Christmas movie, and you know what? I'm gonna tell you why, right after this.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell.
We are back, and yes, for this double-packed episode, my final prerogative is that Die Hard is a great Christmas movie. And now, for some of y'all, that's not too hard to figure out. A lot of people have the opinion that Die Hard is a great Christmas movie. Possibly the Christmas movie. And then there's the rest of you, you know, the ones who are wrong, that Die Hard isn't a Christmas movie. And look, we're not making fun of you. It's just that, you know, look, everybody's entitled to be wrong, okay? Some people are wrong about vaccines. Some people are wrong about sports teams. Some people are wrong about the fact that they refuse to acknowledge that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. You know, it happens. Everybody's wrong about something somewhere. So, but I'm here to help that, because I'm going to tell you why Die Hard is a great Christmas movie, along with being a great movie. And I have it in 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 easy steps. The first thing that makes Die Hard a great Christmas movie, or a great movie in general, Alan Rickman. As the main villain, Hans Gruber, he just commands every scene that he is in. I have not seen sort of a villain be as sophisticated as this one since, you know, Silence of the Lamb and Hannibal Lecter. It's like, it's sort of that same, like, you know, he's evil, he's bad, but you also kind of want to sit and have a cup of coffee with him, you know? Just oozes that sort of sophistication to where it's not your usual villain. And the way he plans everything to happen as though it happens, that's just great writing. But what makes that writing believable is Alan Rickman's performance. You believe that he had been planning everything that he was planning. It makes it hard to believe this is sort of his first feature film. You know, we think of Alan Rickman as this great actor that we all love, who's been in multiple things, from the Harry Potter movies, Robin Hood, Men of Thieves, and many other great things. I was actually surprised to learn in my research that this was apparently his first feature film. And you know what? It didn't even look like it. Like, you would not have believed this was his first feature film, but he owns the scenery, everything in it, in every scene he is in. And number two is another actor who's equally up to the task, and that's Bruce Willis. This, I believe, also being Bruce Willis's, I can't remember if it is or is not his first big feature film, but, you know, coming from a comedy series in Moonlighting, action is not his forte, but Bruce Willis does a really great job of portraying something that the antithesis of what the 80s action hero was. In the 80s, you had your Stallones, you had your Schwarzeneggers, and a big, muscular, sort of classic Reagan-esque American hero guys. Bruce Willis was really more of the antithesis of being more of an everyman type person. And he did a really good job of portraying that. And I think that makes it a much more believable character in this situation. In particular, as opposed to the said aforementioned heroes who just punch their way out of it, you know, he's using his intelligence and smarts to get out of his situations. And those scenes depicts this more than the first scene that Alan Rickman and Bruce Willis are in the movie. Where, you know, Rickman gets caught looking for the explosives, and so he's got to pretend that he's one of the workers who managed to sneak his way out. And so Bruce Willis's character is trying to figure out, is he one of the terrorists, or is he one of the out of the workers who got out? And so you have that great scene to where, and this is where great actors really shine, where they're able to sit and just talk. And they're talking with each other. And you're trying to figure out, is McClane figuring Gruber out? I mean, we know that Gruber knows, it's figured out that he's McClane, because the only person who's not part of their team would be out there at that point. But you're trying to figure out, can McClane figure out that Gruber is a terrorist? And the thing is that Rickman as Gruber doesn't give McClane any reason not to trust him, but also gives him no reason to trust him. So then you have that great decision that they wrote in for McClane character that Willis pulls off perfectly, to where, you know, he gives him the gun. And of course, Rickman's character, Gruber, immediately goes for the double cross, but then there's no bullets in it. It's like, oh, what? No bullets? You think I was stupid? And it was a great test. Like, if he didn't try to kill him, he knew he was one of the workers. But the fact that he did, immediately knew he was one of the terrorists. And it was a great test. Number three would be one more actor who I thought really added a lot to the movie, even though he's only in half the movie and he's on the outside, and that's Renegade Veljohnson. You know, everybody's favorite police officer and 90s TV dad. I will fight anybody to the death. Uncle Phil and Carl Winslow were my two TV dads, and they were the best 90s TV dads, and I will fight anybody to the death on that. But here, you are introduced to a character that sort of represents somebody on the outside of the situation, the event that's going on, that has their lives changed by that event. In this case, an officer who had something happen to his past that put him as a desk jockey. You know, he's a desk jockey, he's on his way home. And they call him because he's the nearest thing. And so he checks it out. Does he do the best job? No. But a series of events happen that make him realize something is going on. In this case, it's a body being thrown out a goddamn window, which is just great. Which leads to him then getting attacked. Which leads to him calling the police and setting the things in motion that Gruber's character wanted in the first place. Even though they don't know that at the time. And so the way everything works, it just was wonderfully written in this movie. But again, sort of Veljohnson's character, who is, or Al Powell, excuse me, being connection to McClane's character on the outside, and a collection to sort of the boys, the grunts and the sort of foot patrol police that, you know, McClane is more connected to than, you know, the police chief or the FBI for that matter, who are recognizing the situation for what they are, though no one's listening to their opinion. And so that sort of connection there, and that sort of friendship that is built upon throughout the movie. My personal favorite scene is, you know, where McClane is needing Al to, you know, tell him about himself so that he can focus not on the pain of taking the shards of glass out of his feet. And, you know, he's asking, like, you know, you're too smart for this. Why are you still a desk cop? And, you know, you get that great story of, I killed a kid. I made a mistake. And that great line of, you know, at the academy, they teach you how to deal with everything except how to deal with a mistake. It's like, oh my God, that line. It's just like, my heart melts at that line right there. And you instantly fall sympathetic for this character. And thus, when the opportunity at the very end of the movie, spoilers by the way, where the one guy who's still alive makes it out and is threatening everybody, and he gets the opportunity at redemption by getting this bad guy. It's great. And it's like, you're happy for the character. And again, so it represents all these things that, quite frankly, I could spend an hour just on Reginald Ville Johnson's character. I could just spend an hour, literally an hour, just talking about all the things that happened in this movie to that character and all the things they represent. And that is just a sign of a great character. Even though he's this side character, but he plays such a huge, important part of the movie. You know, from McClane's wife and some other characters, all of them have sort of this, are play great parts, but he plays the biggest, and he's not even in it that much. And that makes it a great movie. Number four, the action. Great action movies have action sequences that throughout the entire thing are unique, are exciting, but also build off each other to an exciting climax. And I include sort of the sort of stealth aspects as part of that action, because in those aspects you're like, oh, are they going to find McClane? Are they going to get to McClane? And so those play an important part too. All the gunfights are believable and exciting, and they're more than just blanket shooting bullets at each other. There's intelligence in how they're trying to duck and dive and get behind cover and not give each other clean shots, and while still showing how McClane is a good shot as well, needing very little bullets to get guys. And it just builds and builds and builds to that climax where, you know, the roof gets blown, but McClane gets everybody out. And then, of course, that final scene that leads to Gruber falling off the building, which is just, that's just a great character death. And, of course, how they sort of foreshadow that in talking earlier in the movie about the Rolexes. And sort of the fun thing to where a character early in the movie was like, oh man, these Rolexes, I wouldn't give it up. But Hollywood, and she certainly did, to get away from him before Gruber drags her out of the building. All of the action builds and builds to the climax of the film, and it works perfectly. It's believable, it's exciting, and it's just textbook of how you should do an action movie. And then the fifth thing, and this is what seals it as a Christmas movie, is the ambience. From the holiday decorations, the Christmas tree, the holiday music, everything makes it feel like Christmas. Even the fact that majority of the film takes place during night, or should I say, starts at dusk, like late afternoon, into dusk, into evening, and into the deep night. It gives it sort of that, you know, night before Christmas type of feel. Which certainly makes sense considering you have the one character who's sort of saying, 'twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, well, it's not a creature we're stirring, except five guys coming off up on the side of the building. And so it's that sort of ambiance that just makes it a Christmas movie. This entire movie, in a way, reads like a Christmas poem, the way they do it. So again, just all of those things, that's why people look at this as a Christmas movie. If this was just a movie that took place during Christmas, yeah, there wouldn't be anything special about it. But there are enough elements of Christmas in it to make it a wonderful Christmas movie. And sort of the ambience and the feel is what makes that happen. So those five reasons why Die Hard is a great Christmas movie. Maybe I will come back again and we'll do a much deeper dive into Die Hard. Because like I said, I could go on and on Die Hard for hours. But I wanted to like concentrate on why it's a great movie and why it's a great Christmas movie as opposed to the deeper dive I could do. But if you want me to do a deeper dive onto Die Hard, please let me know, and I will certainly do that in a future episode. Because like I said, just on Ville Johnson's character, Powell, I could talk for an hour about the just the uniqueness and the different lenses you could view that character through. And the same could be said for Hans Gruber, Alan Rickman's character, and Bruce Willis's John McClane's character. It's wonderful. And you know what? I love seeing Die Hard every Christmas because it's just a fun movie to watch. It's also a fun movie to watch when it's not Christmas. And that's the thing. Regardless of whether you call it a Christmas movie or not, Die Hard's just a damn good movie to watch. And so as I said, it's Tom's prerogative that Die Hard is a great Christmas movie that can be watched any time of the year. Oh, whew. Well, I picked a hell of a time to come back, now didn't I? See, I came back and I gave you not one, but two prerogative for you to chew on. And I hope you enjoyed them and I hope you were entertained. I hope you certainly enjoy this new format that I'm trying. I hope this new format allows me to be a bit more entertaining, I should say. We're going to take it from there. And like I said, going forward, I hope to have one more Tom Prerogative out before the end of the year. Hopefully before Christmas. Talking about my favorite Christmas specials. One might even say it might even be a Christmas special. But we're going to see. I have to try to get into this slowly, because if I just jump in full force, I'm going to burn myself out again, among other things. So I hope you enjoyed it. Please look forward to more new episodes coming down the Absolution Network's pike. From Tom's Prerogative to other things that I have been wanting to do. Hopefully, if this is successful, as I said, I'll be able to do that more. So, this is the end, and it's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So, until next time, my Tsunami Generation, it's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.